Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Hubler and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, and I'm joined every week by the Coach, Coach K, Ken Schultheis. Coach, I'm just going to tell you, I get crazy every week at the beginning because I'm so excited. But we've got IU Purdue Notre Dame football. We've got a big Jasper versus Heritage Hills game tonight. We've got Paul George's tweet to talk about. There's 2 hours just sometimes doesn't seem like enough, does it?
Well, Joe, no, it doesn't, and it is Friday, and it's basically at that time of the year, football Friday. And you're right, you just brought up several topics that we'll talk about on the show. Of course, we've got Irish Illustrated on the show today, and we've got Pigs from Pigs.com talking IU. The only question that I would have for you, Joe, on your opening show comments was you mentioned Purdue football. And after the shellacking they took, I think it was a MAC team, Central Michigan possibly, is there football in Purdue, at Purdue?
I got to ask the question. I don't know if Purdue coaches seem to be the loyalest people to their quarterback, but Danny Etling has just set the tone the last two games and just not done the job. I'm hoping that he can right the ship or that we make the change. And he looks like a deer in the headlights, feet not set, throwing, when I watch him play quarterback, I think back to things I used to tell Grant Albrand when he was my quarterback in fifth and sixth grade: keep your feet set, stay in the pocket, step up in the pocket if you have to. And he doesn't do that, and he's a Division I Big Ten quarterback. And, I wish Danny success. I'm just not sure after seeing him the first two games if he's the answer. And, last year we went with Rob Henry way too long, and I'm hoping that Coach Hazel will figure out something.
Well, to Etling's defense, and it's hard to give any defense at this point after the beating they took last week to Central Michigan, 38-17. I think some of that comes from confidence in your line's ability to keep a pocket for you. And I think we talked about at the beginning of the year, or we talked about this last week actually, that the concerns for Purdue is what would their line play be like? And obviously, when we talked with Tim Newton a couple weeks ago, would they be able to do something at the line? And Joe, I got to question their ability on their line, both offensive and defensive line, to do what needs to be done.
I think defensive line needs some work. I think the offensive line is vastly improved. I think that Etling took such a beating last year that he just doesn't have confidence anymore, because there's times where he should just sit there and set and throw, and he's just scared and there's no one near him. So he's going to have to gain confidence in those guys. And, I guess after the beating he took last year, I mean, who could almost blame him for being like that? Because believe me, he took a beating. I'd hate to know how he felt on Sunday mornings last year after games were up, the Purdue does have a football team. I talked to Doc Harmon this morning. I tried to get 50 points from him, and he reneged. I thought that was a fair spread.
Well, with the Notre Dame game looming for Purdue, I don't think it gets any better. But I will say this, Joe, and I mean this to our listeners. Listen, folks, I'm going to say it. You're going to laugh. Purdue has a tendency to play Notre Dame pretty decent. And, Joe, if I'm not mistaken, and we'll talk with the Irish Illustrated about this, this is the final game of the series that started back somewhere around 1947 or earlier. This is the final series game for Notre Dame and Purdue, is it not?
I think it's in future schedules, but it's not going to be every year. I think Michigan definitely is off the schedule. Notre Dame's kind of hamstrung by joining the ACC, and you know they have to play so many of those teams every year. For instance, they'll be playing Louisville this year, and which will, I think will be a heck of a game. And so they have to play, I think, three or four games a year in football against AC. They're not up for any ACC football title, but they have to play three or four games. I'm sure Pete Sampson from Irish Illustrated will know that answer. But they have to play that, which, you know, kind of takes their schedule, you know, and some of their traditional people like Michigan and Purdue, and they can't play them every year now. And I don't know if Michigan's on the schedule at all anymore.
Well, either way, you know, folks, I do tongue-in-cheek a lot on the Purdue side because I'm an IU guy, an alumni of Indiana, and Joe is an alumni of Purdue, and we tongue-in-cheek a lot. And I can crow a little bit because IU won their first game against Indiana State, but as we'll talk with Pigs.com coming up in the in the next segment, we'll see what they can do against Bowling Green. Joe, we'll have to have John Goldsberry, former Purdue great football player, on in coming weeks and get his thoughts on the Boilers. But, again, it is early. Danny Etling is a young quarterback. He got thrown into the fire last year. You and I both talked about this. We didn't want to see that happen. And I agree with you, Joe. I think there's some carryover, those happy feet. The dancing feet, maybe we have to do the happy song when we talk about Danny Etling. I don't know. But the happy feet might still be there because of what some of the things he went through last year.
Yeah, it was a tough year.
Well, there's more going on than that, folks. We'll talk about the Big Ten. I'm calling it the Titanic that is the Big Ten. Big boat, unsinkable ship that sunk. And right now I'm wondering about Big Ten football. We'll talk a little bit later in the show about Big Ten football. Obviously, we've got to get Tom Dienert on the show here soon to talk a little bit about that. We've got the Ray Rice situation. Joe, here's what I want to bring up. You saw the video. It's been talked about all over every talk show, every TV sports show. The women's organizations are calling for heads. The Ray Rice video was, it's just even tough to speak about it because regardless of the play that was going on, and I'm not talking about fun play, I'm talking about there was obviously an argument going on between Ray Rice and his then fiancée, slapping, pushing. Now they're saying he spit on her. And then in the elevator where it seems like a little slapping went on and she comes at Ray Rice, and he literally slugs her and knocks her out. And to add salt to the wound, the way he moved her around in the elevator, kind of pushed her a little bit with his foot. I don't know whether he was seeing if she was faking or what. Absolutely uncalled for. No reason for that to ever happen. But it seems like now Ray Rice, who is the person who did it, Ray Rice is the abuser. It's all shifted over to Roger Goodell. And Roger Goodell now becomes the enemy of the state. Folks, I am not taking up for Roger Goodell. I hope he did not see the tape and then do what he did. But I think the focus has to remain on Ray Rice, on violence, abuse against not just women, abuse against anyone. We talk about bullying in school. It starts there as young people. Kids learn it at home with mom and dad, cussing, screaming, slapping each other, throwing things at each other. It's on both sides of the aisle. But let's not take the focus off the people who do the abusing and just blame the system or blame society. Society is at fault. The system does have some culpability to it. But the abuser is Ray Rice. Whether Ray Rice ever plays in the NFL, again, we'll have to see. Whether he's forgiven and somebody gives him a chance, we'll have to see. I believe he might be. But, Joe, I struggle with the fact that all of a sudden we're going after the commissioner of the NFL when we really need to be focused on Ray Rice and other people who do this act and let the courts decide what needs to happen and his wife, she's now his wife. I mean, Roger Goodell, poo on you for not doing more, and really poo on you and your organization if you saw that tape and didn't do more. But, Joe, sometimes we let things take a life of their own and we lose focus on what the real problem is, and we go after somebody else because they're a higher piece in the puzzle or something?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of the criticism on Goodell, and it's like, you know, I don't know. I mean, Ray Rice is the one that did this, and you know, when I'm sure you're just like me. You have a daughter, Paige. I have a daughter, Ryan, and you know, I thought about what if that was Ryan, and you know, or any woman. You know what I mean? I mean, I think I told you last year when Reese was playing AAU basketball about a guy who threatened to take it outside with a female fan of our team, and I could care less about the game at that point. You know, you do not do that. You cannot raise a hand to a woman.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And folks, I'm sure that the Ray Rice issue is going to come up again. Jill mentioned so many other things that we have to talk about as we get through this first segment. Joe, I do want to remind you, and folks, I got some texts last week that didn't come through the phone during the show. And sometimes it's better to just email the show or text Joe, and Joe knows that sometimes my text messages don't come through. And since we operate the show at separate points, Joe now has to email me as the show's going on. Folks, there's so much going on. I know one of the things Joe's excited about is the Cincinnati Bengals. You look at the NFL. This is a big week, folks, for the NFL. And you say, well, it's only the second week, Coach K. Why is this a big week? I think Joe knows where I'm going with this, but the teams that are 0-1, listen to what I'm saying here, folks. The teams that are 0-1, teams that go 0-2, I think the percentages are vastly against them, and I mean highly against them, that they will make the playoffs, that they can overcome the 0-2 start and make the playoffs. Having said that, we're not talking about the Bengals at this point. The Bengals started out with a victory. The NFL, AFL North, the AFL North, Cincinnati, the Steelers, the Ravens, the Browns. The Ravens played last night in their Thursday night game. Everybody thought the Ray Rice situation off the field would cause detriment to the team on the field. I did not think that. I think adversity pulls teams together. Some of the criticisms weren't really at the Ravens. It was at their front office, but not really at the players. The players, they got together. They pulled it together and had a convincing win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the steel curtain looks like the shredded curtain right now. But you have the Browns in that division who played the Steelers to the last couple minutes. Steelers are 1-1. Ravens 1-1. Browns 0-1. And the Bengals 1-0. Joe, you got to be feeling pretty good about the Bengals at this point.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was a great, great play by A.J. Green to bobble the ball but stay with it and catch it and then juke to the end zone for the game winner. But I'll tell you what, another Cincinnati Bengals story that's, you know, is a favorite of mine is them keeping Devin Still, defensive tackle on the practice squad, to help pay for his daughter's cancer treatment. And this week they started selling Devon Still jerseys, and all profits are going to go to a fund. And New Orleans Saints coach Sean Payton bought 100 jerseys. I know some people said, oh, he could afford that. You know what? It's just the act that he did it. You know what I mean? He bought 100 jerseys to help support that. And I think it's great how the NFL, I mean, talking about Ray Rice and all that's wrong with the NFL, to talk about what you know, the feel-good stories, Sean Payton buying 100 jerseys. He didn't have to buy 100 Bengal jerseys. No one would have, you know, did any other coach do it? So, you know, they all could afford it too, yeah, but he did it. And it was just the act that he showed his for that situation that was just great.
I agree 100%. I think sometimes we forget that whether you have the ability to purchase things or not, when you reach out to help out something, help out a cause, sow into something, I don't care if you have a dollar or $1,000, that's what it's all about, that you're willing to do it, that you're willing to put forth and do that. Joe, I know we got Michael Pegram coming up in the next segment. Are you going to get him, or is he going to call in?
Yeah,
or?
I'm going to go right now and get him.
Okay, well, we'll let Joe go and get our first guest, Mike Pegram, before we go to break. I'll cover a couple things while Joe goes and does that. I do want to bring up the Broncos and the Colts the other night. It was a Sunday night late box score. The Broncos beat the Colts 31-24 in Denver. And the Broncos and Peyton Manning were dominant in the first half, absolutely dominant. The second half kind of went the way the game in Indianapolis went last year during the regular season. The Colts made a big run. Andrew Luck showed his mettle. Folks, Andrew Luck is the real deal. But guess what? Peyton Manning is too. So right now I would say that the Broncos have a better overall team offensively and defensively. I think they are absolutely a threat to get back to the Super Bowl. But I'm going to say one thing. And guys that love Peyton Manning, and I'm one of them, probably aren't going to like this. I thought the last 8 minutes, Peyton Manning got a little shaky mentally. I thought he felt like last year's game was coming back. Some throws he tried to aim the ball instead of doing what he does, throw it out there to the spot where he knows the receiver's going to be. And he was shaky those last 8 minutes. I don't like seeing that out of a veteran quarterback. And it really gave Indianapolis a great opportunity to actually be in a position to tie the game. Denver's defense, the second half, looked like they wore down. They were not strong. They did not make the big plays that they made in the first half. So you've got a tale of two teams right there. You've got the Denver Broncos defense emotionally charged in that first half. But guess what? The game is four quarters. And Broncos, if you're going to get back to the Super Bowl, you're going to have to bring it for four quarters. And that's going to be critical for the Broncos. So
yes, it is.
Just my comments there. Folks, we're going to go to break. I want to also mention before we go to break, Edward Jones Financial Group, financial partners for you in everything you want to do to build your future as you steady the present. They're going to perpetuate you. They're going to give you the opportunity to retire when you're ready to retire, and they're going to give you the opportunity to live well. They're going to help you to live well by partnering you and putting a plan together. Give Janet Schulteis a call. Give Janet Schulteis a call at Edward Jones Financial. They've got the plan. They've got decades of experience taking people from where they are to where they want to go, where they want to be, and keeping them there. Call Janet at 812-479-8215. Again, it doesn't matter where you're at. Throughout the United States, give her a call. She can work with you. She can help you. And does it really matter where you live if the plan that you attach yourself to, the person you attach yourself to, is going to get you where you need to go? Again, call her at 812-479-8215. Janet and Beth Gels will help you get where you need to go, and they'll help you to live well. And, folks, isn't that what it's all about? We're going to go to break. When we come back, we got Michael Pegram with Pegs.com. We're talking Hoosier football, and we might talk a little Hoosier basketball at the same time. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Uvalar with Uvalar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Right now, Uvalar's has a huge selection of awesome pre-owned vehicles, cars, trucks, vans, sport utilities, in most all price categories, and they're all priced to sell. Some are certified, and some have special low APRs, but best of all, they are all priced to sell. Uvalar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends for great pre-owned vehicles since 1929.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Cody Zeller, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on Friday's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. You are listening and talking with Coach K, Ken Schulteis. Joe's got our first guest as we start the second segment of the show, and we love him when he comes on the show because he is a plethora of knowledge, especially when it comes to IU athletics. We welcome our guest, Michael Pegram, Pegs.com. Pegs, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back, Coach.
Well, it's great to have you, and I'm a little excited. I'm not going to lie. I mean, the Hoosiers are off to a 1-0 start. It wasn't brilliant against the Trees, the Sycamores of Indiana State. We had lightning and thunder and rain, and that wasn't on the field. It was coming down on the field. The IU came out. Coach Wilson and his group kind of got their feet under themselves. They come out with the win. The offense didn't look great or polished. The defense, different times, okay. A lot of young guys back out on the field. I think 11 freshmen saw significant time. Took a week off, had a chance to focus on the Hoosiers, and then get ready for Bowling Green. Where are we at, Mike? What do you think about the Hoosiers at this point?
Well, we really don't know at this point. I think that we got positive signs from the opener, both defensively and with the running attack. You know, I think they broke a stadium record for rushing yards, and two guys had career highs, so that was nice to see from an Indiana fan perspective. And the defense really didn't give up many points at all, because I think both of Indiana State's scores came off of turnovers when they were deep in territory. So, you know, that was a good sign for that new 3-4 defensive concept under their new coordinator, Brian Noor. So it was a positive, but, again, that was the weakest team that they have on the schedule this season.
Looking at the defense and Brian Noor's schemes and things, did Brian talk to the media much in the last week and a half? What were his thoughts? What are your feelings? Where's Coach Noor feel like this defense is at this point?
Well, he seemed pretty happy with things. I think they had roughly three or four sacks. They don't have a great pass rusher per se, but the linebacker depth is up thanks to some young guys that played and return of some veterans, and they have a pretty decent secondary. They had 10 of 11 starters back. Now, granted, that's from a team that really struggled defensively, but a year means more time to get stronger, and they added that freshman class. It's really good, and I think there's some positives. I think it's also a little bit of a benefit that they won't maybe admit to, but when you have a running attack that's working, the defense is not on the field nearly as much, and there's a little bit more rest at defense that Indiana might have versus their kind of teams of the last couple of years when they were scoring awfully fast.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point, and I'll kind of throw this out there. Last year I always went into the games, and I felt like IU had to outscore everybody. And obviously, the casual listener is going to say, Coach K, that makes a lot of sense. You got to score more points anyway. But I'm talking about that the offense always had to do the work, that I never felt that the defense was going to create turnovers, was going to get the ball back into the hands of the offense in a position where they could put some points up on the board. I always felt like our offense was going to have to go out there and create all those points by themselves. Are we a step above that this year, Mike? Are we to the point where And I know it's early, and I know it was just Indiana State, but do you get a feeling that these younger guys that are now veteran sophomores that were talented when they came in the door and obviously have gotten stronger? I know Coach Wilson has bragged about how much stronger this team is overall physically. Can we count on the defense? I know we need to, but can we count on the defense to create some turnover opportunities? Because we were abysmal in the Big Ten last year.
Yeah, I think you're asking, can this be at least a mediocre defense? And that's the question I hear all the time. If it's a mediocre defense, then, you know, if the offense is as productive as they have been, this team can make a bowl game. I mean, there's no doubt about that, I think. And I do think there's more talent. There should be a better defense. And the schedule's a little bit tougher this year than a year ago. So, you know, maybe they might be better and not get to the 6 or 7 wins, but I do think that they have potential to have about the defense they need to get over the hump. But it's really the question to ask next week and especially in 2 weeks after they go to Missouri. But we'll really learn the answer. But I do think there's hope because of returning veterans and what we saw against Indiana State.
You know, turning our focus to the offensive side, I know walking out of the game, you know, fans are fans, and walking out of the game, a number of them had comments. They were a little surprised that the offense wasn't as, I guess, on cue as they thought it would be. You know, we do have some receivers that lack some experience. They're younger, but basically this is an offense that has some veteran skilled players. They know the offense. They're still learning some routes, and they're still learning some checks and things like that. But did you have any concerns about the offense, that they weren't a little bit further along, or did you feel they were about where you thought they would be?
Well, I guess there might have been a concern in that no receiver really looked great out there. And they're replacing 4 key guys to throw to. I think 3 starters at wide, two wide receiver starters, and Ted Bolzer, the tight end, along with key reserve Deuce Wilson last year. So there's a lot of guys that have to step up, and nobody seemed to do that in game one yet. Again, they ran the ball so well, they didn't need to throw much. But I think that is a little bit of a concern when we're watching as we get into where they have to throw a little bit now. The offensive line is as good as I think I've ever seen an Indiana offensive line. I wrote about that yesterday. I think that, and they have a tremendous running back, and Tevin Coleman is one of the best running backs in the country. So I think it's just going to be a different offense. We're going to get more done over the ground as opposed to the passing game. But I still think it's going to be a pretty good offense, that just a little bit different balance to it.
I think the interesting points you make, and folks, again, you need to follow Mike Pegram at Pegs.com. Go on his website, sign up, become a member. Everything IU you want to know, plus all kinds of information about high school athletes coming up that the Hoosiers are interested in. But I think you make a great point, the balance end of things. And obviously, if we create a strong running game with a strong offensive line, that only gives our young receivers some time to get acclimated, and it only gives what I think is a strong passing offense that Coach Wilson has, and pretty much in place with this quarterback, an opportunity to really shine at times in the game and surprise some people, not surprise them, but make some big plays that are just going to add to the momentum of our offense. So your point is well taken. We probably have as versatile of an offense as I've seen at IU in a long time, and as you said, one of the best offensive lines you've seen. Now, going into the Bowling Green game, Bowling Green is minus their starting quarterback, I believe, but they are still considered a strong team in that conference. What do the Hoosiers need to do, and what do we need to be looking for as we go into that game?
Well, I mean, can they have some receivers step up to kind of balance that offense and allow Tevin Coleman to run like he did in the opener? and in that defense, because Bowling Green is a fast-paced team. They have had trouble stopping teams, but they have a, you know, even though they're going with a quarterback playing his second game or starting his second game, they can score some points, and they're kind of mimicking that fast-paced style that Indiana has. And so can that, you know, Hoosier defense step up and be, you know, at least mediocre enough to give the offense enough rest and so forth. So, you know, I think that those are the main things. I just, again, can some receivers step up? Can they get the ball to Shane Wynn, who's their best receiver? And they didn't do that against Indiana State. That would be a definite thing we'll watch. But, you know, Bowling Green has struggled. They changed the coaching staff. They were really good last year, even though they lost to Indiana. And MAC teams knocked off a couple Big Ten teams last weekend to give you, you know, notice that none of these games are definite. And it's up at Bowling Green. So it should be very interesting tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon.
Well, I do like the fact that the Hoosiers are coming off the break. They got to correct some things that they needed to do. They got to add to their playbook and go through the new routes and checks and whatever else they needed to do. And I don't mind that they're going on the road. I don't mind that this group gets to go on the road against a team that I think they should win the football game. I think we all believe they should win the football game. But I think it's great to get out of the comforts of Bloomington and put some of those young people to the test on the road to see what happens. But speaking of MAC teams and speaking of the Big Ten, one of the questions I posed last week was, could the Big Ten, with the new championship format, could the Big Ten have a team with one loss and get into that Final Four championship football run, that Final Four of football? We saw Michigan State get beat by Oregon State, a game that was pretty good until it got into later in the second half, and the skill and speed of Oregon State, you know, just took it to Michigan State at the end. Purdue loses to Central Michigan. Notre Dame, which everybody had question marks on, dominates Michigan. Ohio State, I called it a trap game last week. I vehemently said I don't like Ohio State having to switch quarterbacks, playing a Virginia Tech team coached by Frank Beamer. I knew it was at home. I didn't feel good about that game. Is the Big Ten in trouble from a national perspective right now?
Yeah, they are. This is not going to be, I think, a year that they've produced for that. I just don't see it. I mean, they've already had enough damage as it is. I mean, the Big Ten's had a little bit of disadvantage. The best players are in the South, Southeast, you know, Texas and so forth. But, you know, usually I do think they would have somebody good enough to be a serious contender for that playoff situation. But this year, you know, I just don't see it. I think Ohio State losing Braxton Miller was a big blow in that regard. And I don't think Wisconsin has the passing attack to do it. And Michigan State losing that game at Oregon was a real killer in that regard. I do think they could be throwing a bet on anybody that they might be one to wreck, you know, to go on a run and be good enough. But I really don't see a team that looks like it's going to be in the mix for, you know, the top five or so in the country.
Does that bring another question into play? Well, actually, two questions before we end the segment. First of all, is it to the advantage of anyone? And I don't know how the whole championship series breaks out, but should a Michigan State play in Oregon this early in the season, first game basically? Should an Ohio State, even though they had a game under their belt, play a Virginia Tech this early in the season? Are you putting yourself in a position because of the short season, because of the questions of the Big Ten? There's just no way Ohio State loses another game, Michigan State loses another game. There's just no way they're at all in the conversation for any type of championship series.
I do think you need to play somebody good in the non-conference if you really want to be in that discussion. I don't know. Michigan State going all the way out to Oregon, that was a that was a risky move. But, you know, Ohio State should, you know, I don't think Virginia Tech was even ranked. You know, a good program, and it's at, but it's at, a, you know, Ohio Stadium. That's a game they should normally win. They're just not good enough, I don't think. I mean, they don't have an offensive line that's very good, and they have some real weaknesses. And, you know, Michigan State had a risky move, but with that, and that, you know, that may be something they regret at this moment. But you think you do have to play somebody that's ranked or somebody that's pretty good to kind of the confidence that to get the votes in the polls.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that part. I do think the Michigan State schedule, that scheduling was very questionable, especially to have it that early in the season against a powerhouse team. And I know they do some of that stuff, but still, Oregon's had a great program now for several years. I do think Michigan State can make the corrections that it needs to make, but I do think they hurt themselves as far as having a look. Ohio State, I don't know what to think. But before we end this segment, this is where the second question comes in. When you see an Ohio State and you see a Michigan and you see a few of those teams play the way they did and you see some of their weaknesses, does that not give you a little hope for IU when they play those
games?
Yeah.
We were just talking about Michigan the other day, like, among the press, like we thought, you know, that would be a really tough game. And, you know, that may be a very winnable game for Indiana now. And even Ohio State, if you hang in there, there were so many plays that Braxton Miller made against Indiana last year on third and long or whatever to convert on just his running and scrambling. And now that's taken away. You know, that's not a definite loss in my opinion anymore. So it's interesting, and who knows what will happen against Maryland and Rutgers. They have no history to lean on there and those kind of games. So it's going to be really an interesting year. I think we're really looking forward to covering it. I think the rest of the year is every game has a little of intrigue.
I agree with you, and I'm getting so excited for the Hoosiers and football and what's coming and what possibly could come our way. Folks, I'm telling you, if you want to get up-to-date information, if you want to get the insight, the locker room stuff, get to Pegs.com. Become a subscriber. Mike Pegram will not let you down. He'll give you everything you need to know about the Hoosiers. Mike, thanks for being with us again on the Coach K and Joe Show.
Coach, it was great again. I look forward to seeing you in the future.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Folks, we're going to go to break. Remember, we've got Irish Illustrated's Pete Sampson coming up here before the show's over, and also Kirk Duxell. We're going to be talking some high school football as well. We're going to break. Joe, take us there. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? We'll team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. And, folks, I don't know what's going on. I know Joe's caught up in watching his son and getting him ready for his game tonight. He's got the twins that are participating in football in the middle school level, and he's keeping track of his daughter down in Miami. No music going into the segments. And I like to rock out a little bit or have a little fun going into that segment, but I guess Joe just didn't want to play any music this time. We've got in this segment, Irish Illustrated, Pete Sampson joins us. Folks, as much as I love the Hoosiers, I love Notre Dame football. Always have, always will, good times and bad. And what started out as a season with a lot of question marks and they're still there. But my gosh, Rice victory, a dominant performance against Michigan in their final game of the series, at least for the years we can see foreseeable. Pete Sampson coming to the show. Are you? Should I be excited about the Irish?
Yeah, I think that everyone around here is a little bit more excited than they thought they would be. You know, if you look at this team, I don't think 2-0 was a surprise. I mean, the expectation was clearly to beat Rice handily, and then to beat Michigan as well. The game was here, finale, all that stuff, but nobody saw 31-0. So I think it is. The record's not a surprise, but how they've gotten there, I think it's shocked a lot of people around the program.
Yeah, and Pete, that's one thing I was going to ask you about as we started this. And, of course, this is Pete Sampson with Irish Illustrated. And, folks, make sure if you want to know about Notre Dame and the great schedule that they play, you got to get with Irish Illustrated. Pete, is the Michigan game, when we look at it, we see a dominant performance by the Irish. Is it that the Irish are better than we thought they were? Michigan is woeful. I mean, let's face it. The Irish dominated the line of scrimmage. And there, that was some of the question going into the season. How would the Irish be on the line of scrimmage? Well, they pretty much dominated both sides of the line of scrimmage. And it's not often, at least in the history of Michigan football, that you can dominate them at the line of scrimmage and just totally control their ability to run the football.
Yeah, it was a surprise, particularly Notre Dame's defensive line. That was probably the weakest unit coming into the season. Then you have a suspension where Ishak Williams is taken off, so you're down a starter. They're starting basically a true freshman at defensive end, playing a true freshman at defensive tackle and another true freshman at defensive end. So Michigan's offensive line is not very good, but I didn't think that Notre Dame's defensive line would handle them as well as they did. And I think so much credit has to go to defensive coordinator Brian Van Gore. He's come in here with a very complex NFL-style defense, and these players really have picked it up much quicker than I think the coaching staff would have thought. It's been impressive how much the staff has been able to get out of the talent on hand defensively. And then offensively, I think it's just the question of Everett Golson. He hasn't really picked up where he left off. He sort of skipped a grade while he was away. His play has been so far superior to what we saw at the end of his redshirt freshman season. That sort of made everything go offensively. And finally, you watch Notre Dame with Brian Kelly, and you're finally seeing the offense that he had at Cincinnati and Central Michigan and Grand Valley State that people assumed, him included, that would just transition naturally to South Bend. It hasn't worked out that way, but finally having an experienced quarterback with some mobility, you're seeing what he can do offensively, what he's about as a coach.
I absolutely agree with that. I've been a Brian Kelly fan. I know that is a fishbowl where he's at, but that's part of life when you're a coach. And you know, I always said, even on the high school level, I'd rather be coaching somewhere where it matters than coaching somewhere where it doesn't. And at Notre Dame, it matters. But back to Brian Van Gorder. He brings in this defense. You know, a lot of people knock on the Irish. You get the Colin Cowards and all these guys. They knock on the Irish for their lack of athletic ability, their lack of speed, all these different things. Well, you can't bring in that pro-style defense without, one, the commitment to physical play, and you got to have some athletes to do that. And his passion on the sideline was so exciting to see, especially when he knew they were going to hold on to the shutout. Have people underestimated maybe some of the athletic ability on this Irish football team?
You know, I think that at corner, probably so. In the front seven, I don't know if they necessarily have a ton of great athletes. They are starting a former walk-on and middle linebacker, and you can't gloss that over. But Jalen Smith, an Indiana kid from Fort Wayne, and Sheldon Day, defensive tackle from Indianapolis, I mean, these were high-end athletes for their position. I think the question was, If you only have a couple of those guys, can teams scheme them out of the game? Are you going to be able to double-team Sheldon Day to make him ineffective and make some of these true freshmen and unproven defensive linemen beat you? Are you going to be able to chip Jalen Smith with a tight end and run at him with an offensive tackle and sort of take him away and negate that speed? And I think that's where Van Gorder has really come into play, because Notre Dame's defensive line has one star player, Sheldon Day. The other guys are good players but not great. And so my concern was, okay, they're just going to double-team him all game and take him away. Well, against Michigan, you saw him be unblocked. Michigan couldn't even account for him because they were so confused about where the pressures were coming. So to me, that's good coaching. You've taken an offense out of their rhythm so much that they can't even account for the one guy they absolutely have to account for, and now you're seeing Jalen Smith's athleticism and Sheldon Day's athleticism really, really shine, and I think that, again, it goes back to Van Gorder.
Yeah, I'd love that part of it. I'd love to see the passion on the defense, and they're aggressive and they're taking some chances. But that's how you get better. You got to learn, and you got to be willing to step up and play a little bit out of your comfort zone. And Brian's been able to get guys to do that. Talking about Mr. Electric, Everett Golson, I call him Electric. Number five, just you said he skipped a level. And I would agree with you in these first two games. I've noticed a very mature, pretty disciplined quarterback, and even some of the missed throws, Irish receivers dropped them. They were very catchable balls, should have been caught, actually. It looks like he makes good decisions. It looks like he's comfortable. It looks like when he does move on those feet, he has a plan, and I realize as you get older, those things come to you with experience. But we're talking about a guy who missed a whole year, Pete. So he really has done exactly what you said, missed a grade and has stepped up in these first two games and looked really veteran, electric, mature, and ready to lead this Irish team to a little bit level, a higher level than what most people thought they might be.
Yeah, there's no question. His completion percentage isn't as good as his accuracy has been, if that makes sense, because of those drops factor in. If he doesn't see anything open, he's happy to throw it away. So that things percentage too. But, I think he's attempted maybe 60, he's about 66% for the season right now. But, it's between the drops, the throwaways, you take those out. I mean, really, you're talking about maybe two or three throws per game, about 10% of his throws were just like, that was off. That was on him. So he's been very accurate, and I think his ability to keep plays alive behind the line of scrimmage, which isn't a surprise. I mean, this is what he could do as a freshman, but then he couldn't pair that with keeping his eyes downfield and seeing everything as it developed. Now he can do that. So, yeah, he's been a revelation for Notre Dame. Everyone thought he would be good, but he has been, I mean, he's bordered on great, really, the first two games.
You know, the Irish, and I won't belabor this, but everybody still asks about it. It's not on the front page of the Irish News, but let's just talk about it real quick. They went through the academic fraud. Some players were involved in that. Has that thing got ironed out? Where's things sit with that? Has it been put behind this Notre Dame team? Where are we at on all that?
Yeah, I mean, there's no resolution on it, and we've continued to ask Brian Kelly about it consistently, really over the last 3 weeks. It was 2 weeks ago, yesterday, where he said the investigation had concluded, and he expected hearings and a resolution to be imminent. 2 weeks is probably not too many people's definition of imminent. Based on talking to people around the university, it's in the hands of the provost's office now. They need to come to a decision. They're concerned that there might be some legal action taken against them. So at this point, they're trying to not just have the correct decision and sort through all the information. They're also trying to make sure they're as protected as they possibly can be from a litigation standpoint. I think that has factored into some of the delays here. But it's a situation. It doesn't look good for the university. And I think that the criticism that Notre Dame's been getting now has shifted from academics, support, things of that nature, to just sort of general common sense about how you treat student athletes.
These kids don't seem to have an idea of what's happening or when it's going to happen. Their families have no idea what's going to happen or when it's going to happen. And even Lou Holtz, we talked to him at a benefit last Friday, and he said that these players now are being treated unfairly. Whether they did anything wrong or not, they need to know and should know what's going to happen next for them. And as of 10:50 in the morning on Friday, 2 weeks after the investigation has been concluded, they don't know. They have no idea.
Yeah, I think you make two really good points. First of all, everybody's got to cross the T's and dot the I's because we are in a litigious society. And, folks, you can sue for anything, and especially when you get into a situation, high profile, academic fraud, kids' futures on the line, families are impacted, reputations are impacted. You really have to be clear about what you can do, what you can say, how you can say it. It's just not as clear-cut as we did an investigation, now we throw out the results. They got to go through it. So I understand being a little patient there. The other point I think you bring up, and I also agree, these young men, regardless of what they did or didn't do, they still are a part of the university, their families, whatever case, whether they're paying tuition, whether they're out there on scholarship, they need to feel like someone's communicating with them. It's just difficult on their emotions, their attitudes, how they approach their day when they don't have people communicating with them. And I think if I've learned one thing when I was teaching on the high school level, coaching, in business, whatever I've done, the thing that really gets people crossways is a lack of communication. And so your points are well taken. I hope that the university takes the criticism, not as somebody just griping, but hey, maybe there's something we can do better to keep these families and keep these kids informed. You're never going to make them happy, Pete, but they didn't make you happy by getting into this situation, but you got to communicate.
Yeah, at some point, if you're not going to allow them to play for you again at Notre Dame, let them know. I think that's where we are with this investigation and this situation. It's like if you're Kavari Russell, who is good enough to play in the NFL, and you have no intention of allowing him to play at Notre Dame again, let him know so he can go somewhere else and play. At this point, we're a third of the way or a quarter of the way through the season by tomorrow night. So if it's going to be a 3-game suspension, that's fine. They can move on. But if you have no intention of allowing them to return to Notre Dame, let them get on with the rest of their lives, athletically and academically, instead of having them go to class, write papers, do all that stuff, and then have it all yanked out from under them next week or 2 weeks from now. We really don't know when that decision is going to come down.
Yeah, it's a tough situation, especially with the football season going on, but that's where we're at in college athletics. That's where we're at in sports in general. But let's focus in on what's at hand, and that is a Notre Dame team, 2-0, playing pretty darn well, and they're going to take on a Purdue Boilermaker team. It's a storied rivalry as far as a history of games being played. But one thing I remember about this is Notre Dame, and I don't think it's going to happen, but Notre Dame has to be careful of a letdown. Purdue obviously coming off just, I don't know if humiliating is too strong of a word, but you know, just really dominated by Central Michigan in a loss 38-17. But Purdue always seems to come back and play Notre Dame pretty well. Is there any, I mean, the big win against Michigan, the focus is on the national attention they've got. Brian Kelly, how's he approaching this game? What do they got to do? How do you feel about this Purdue-Notre Dame game?
You know, I think that a neutral site helps Notre Dame with that letdown factor. I think it would almost be more likely to be a letdown if the game was at Notre Dame because the fans were jacked for last weekend against Michigan, the night game. Purdue is not at that level of rivalry, or even though historically it goes back much more than Michigan does. So I think having it sort of at a neutral site where you have to create your own energy, I think the crowd will be pretty good being two in-state schools, but I almost sort of look at it as like the Crossroads Classic that they do in basketball with Butler, IU, Purdue, and Notre Dame, or even just like an NCAA tournament game where, you know, you're not going to have some of the traditions of the home crowd. And the team, I think, is going to have to create their own energy on Saturday night, which I think is just that's healthy in this kind of game where it could be a letdown. I think, if anything, the letdown that Notre Dame is going to have is going to be after the bye week, and then they go to New York to play Syracuse at MetLife Stadium outside New York City. So I think the combination of the neutral site and just the fact that the way these games have gone the last 2 years, where they've been so tight, whether Notre Dame has been really good and Purdue has been really bad, it hasn't mattered. So I think you combine those two things, Notre Dame is, I think, set up to avoid the letdown. I think there are too many signs points that make this look like a trap game for Notre Dame to ignore all those signs and actually have it be a trap game.
Well, I would agree with you, and I just think that Purdue will bounce back a little bit, but I think the big thing from a coach's standpoint is if I'm Notre Dame and Brian Kelly and his staff, you know, we want to come out, we want to go to work, get our business done, get a win here. I think this is an opportunity for Everett and the group to show their maturity level. How far have they really come? Do they understand how to be mentally prepared, mentally ready, regardless of who they play, no matter where they play, no matter what game it's coming after or what game it's come before? You know, the old adage, taking care of business. Well, I think this is one of those games where the coaching staff can find out where this team is at mentally as far as their maturity level and professionalism, even though it's college athletics, in getting ready to play a game, not an opponent, a game.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that Brian Kelly talked about during the week, because I thought, you know, you've covered the team for 14 years, so you've heard all sorts of coaching cliches and motivational quips and all that stuff, but his quote this week was, "We don't rise to the level of our opponent, we sink to the level of our preparation," meaning that it's about you. It has nothing to do with who you play. You shouldn't and can't, you know, lean on your opponent to get you ready to play the game. You need to lean on yourself. So we'll see on Saturday night if that message has taken root or it hasn't. Because against Purdue, it's been a struggle for them, really, under Brian Kelly. They blew them out in 2011. Struggled a little bit in his first game as coach in 2010, and then the last 2 years have been really difficult to get through Purdue, and that includes one where they went to the national championship game. So the series hasn't made a whole lot of sense. I think Brian Kelly's been sort of searching to press the right button for motivation and preparation purposes, and, you know, we'll find out tomorrow night if he's finally found it.
Yeah, well, great stuff, Pete. Real quickly, before we let you go, how can our listeners – click on, follow Irish Illustrated, and keep track of the Irish through Irish Illustrated.
Come to irishillustrated.com. We're the Notre Dame corner of the rivals.com network. So you can come check us out for team news, features. We do a lot of recruiting coverage, so we're on the road seeing prospects, video interviews, highlights of those guys, breaking news, of course. So you can come check us out at irishillustrated.com.
Great stuff, Pete. Thanks for being with us. We look forward to talking with you and the rest of the Irish Illustrated staff going forward.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Great stuff. As we go to break, remember, all our guests that we talked to, Michael Pegram, Pete Sampson, courtesy of the Lantern Road Capital Partners Coaches Line, financial partners to help you grow your business. Contact Lantern Road Capital Partners at 317-576-7543. Lantern Road Capital Partners can help you take your business or your business idea and take it to the next level. We're going to go to break. When we come back, there's more in the second hour of Friday's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. You've been listening to the coach. You've been listening to Joe. We're going to the break. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee.
You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar & Sons Toyota in Jasper. You know what happens when you sell a bunch of new Toyotas? You trade for hundreds of great pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, and sport utilities. Many are certified, have factory warranty remaining, fully inspected, and they're all priced to sell. Hurry in for the best selection. Ubelar & Sons Toyota, where customers send their friends for a great pre-owned vehicle since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hi, this is Kent Benson, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show. Folks, what a great show that first hour. We had Michael Pegram, Mike Pegram from Pegs.com, talking about the Hoosiers. We had Pete Sampson from Irish Illustrated talking Notre Dame football. Where are you going to go to hear that great stuff? We got great guests. We always have great guests. We're going to have Kurt Dukestell coming up here soon, talk a little high school football. But that's what you get on the Coach K and Joe Show. Mike Pegram, is great. You know, he doesn't cut corners. He's not trying to make somebody feel good. He talks about IU. He tells you the way they see it. And they don't follow these guys once they get to IU. They follow them all the way up before they ever get to IU. And same with Irish Illustrated. You know, Brian Kelly and that Notre Dame team, electric Everett Golson, number 5, he's been awesome. They're going through some tough times up there off the field, as we're seeing all over sports right now, the unfortunate thing. We're seeing that all over sports right now. Pro level, it's tough. But Irish Illustrated, Pete Sampson, thank you for being on. That was a great first hour. We got a solid second hour coming up. Folks, I did want to mention something before we get into sports. You know, this is a sports talk show, and we talk about other things as well, because sports is just a small part of life. It's a fun part of life, and sometimes it's a gut-wrenching part of life. But, you know, sometimes in sports you get that visceral moment where it's just gut-wrenching. And then in life in general you have those moments too. Got word this morning this happens way too much, a suicide on a high schooler up in the Indianapolis area. I'm not going to say the school right now, it's got word of it. But this is the second suicide in several weeks. And having gone through that scenario when I was teaching and coaching, where we had several suicides within a span of about 12 months, I can tell you there's nothing more difficult, nothing more gut-wrenching. Not only the fact that someone would make a decision like that, but the fact that someone would not see opportunity, would not have hope for future, would not understand that they have so much to give to this life, to this earth, to people around them, that they have so much to offer in their life, and just what they're going through right now, what they're struggling with, is just a small piece. I know it seems so great to them at that time. So young people listening, adults listening, because adults do it too. You have so much to offer to this world, to this earth, and life is about the seasons. Just not like we have seasons of the year as we get ready to go into fall. Life is about seasons, and maybe one season you have a winter, But spring's right around the corner. Summer is there, fall, and even winters can be wonderful. But you have to understand that things work in seasons. And so I just have to take a few moments and tell people not to give up. Don't copy, don't say, oh, well, look at the attention this person got. I never got any attention. This is my opportunity to get attention. No, it's not. It becomes dust in the wind, gone. And all the great gifts that God placed inside of you, all the wonderful moments that you have ahead of yourself, when you grow and you start to blossom and you start to flourish, and the person you may marry someday or become partners with, the children you may raise, whether they're genetically your own or whether you adopt and bring give somebody home, all those things, the people you'll touch in the jobs that you have, the courage come on display for you as you're willing to fall down and get back up. You know, I tell my kids all the time, and I know I'm just a dad, and they probably say, you know, if you're coaching kids, it seems like they listen a lot more than when you're just a dad. Have the courage to fail. Have the courage to fail. So what? Get back up. The season will change. The opportunity, the experience that you will gain will put you in a position to succeed the next time. I even go as far as have the confidence to allow people to criticize you. Laugh at yourself so that when people laugh at you, it doesn't matter. Laugh at yourself. That's one thing I've learned over the years, to laugh at myself a little bit more. But I've got to say this, folks. Young people, adults, no one knew that this young man was contemplating this. He had friends. I don't know why. But sometimes I think people think, well, this is a moment for me. No, it's not. It's an end. It's an end. It's not a moment. The moments for you are coming in the future. So just a tough situation. Joe, I don't know if you're with me right now, but again, I don't want to get into the school that it happened at, but it's the second one in the last few months. It's got to be devastating to the family, to the school community, to the friends. A lot of times people call it selfish. A lot of times people call it cowardly. I call it a waste of that individual's potential and wonderful moments that are ahead of them in their lives. And having gone through it as a teacher, when I was teaching, it was so impactful. It was so draining. It is so difficult. It is so visceral to see young people walk away from what can be their future and so much they can give and so much they can receive for just that moment where they make a decision that doesn't impact their life. It ends their life, Joe.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. I mean, you know, we lived through it. We had a friend when we were in college, you know, that made that decision, and it's tough for those that are behind you. And you know, you just wish that if someone needs help, just talk to someone. Everyone's got someone that'll listen.
Yeah, absolutely. And folks, I'm not a professional. I understand that, but I have experienced it, been through it. Not someone in my family, but people that I cared about, people that I saw on a daily basis, people that I never saw it coming, others that I knew were struggling, that were trying to get help. But it doesn't, it's not a moment. It's an end. And you've got so much ahead of yourself. I can't explain to you how you'll get knocked down and how you'll take some punches and how you'll spin around some days and say, what in the heck? I was doing this, and this is the response I get. But there's going to be all those other moments where your life, you just being there, it's going to impact and change not just your life, but people around you. And the greatest feeling in the world, in my opinion, the greatest feeling in the world is when you've helped someone else get to somewhere they didn't think they could be, or you gave somebody a reason to smile, and you don't even know you were doing it. But guess what? That person can't smile if you're not there. You can't hug if you're not there. You can't have an impact or be impacted if you're not there. So my prayers go out to the family. Folks, this copycat stuff needs to stop. Your 15 minutes of a moment, it's not a moment. It's an end. So I'm going to leave it right there on that. I just wanted to bring it up. Joe, great guest so far today. We've got the Irish Illustrated. Great to have them on board. I give you credit for reaching out to them. Pete Sampson was great today.
Yes, he was. And Mike Pegram, as always, was great. And right now, Kurt was in the middle of something and had to excuse himself for a second. And he's supposed to be calling in when he's free. So we'll have Kurt Gugsell with DC Broadcasting coming up to talk about Indiana high school football.
Yeah, and that's not a problem. When I see him flash up on the board, we'll just start moving to a break, and I'll say something to you. But let's talk about the Titanic. And the Titanic meaning the Big Ten. If you know, a little bit earlier in the show, I was talking with Mike Pegram of Peaks.com. Make sure you become a subscriber to Peaks.com. And I said, the Titanic, the Big Ten looks like the Titanic. Here's this big, unsinkable ship, this conference that's so dominant. It's a wealthy conference, Joe. It makes a ton of money. But we have started this new championship series year on a really sour note. You've got Michigan State. Again, I don't understand the scheduling. Would you schedule Oregon? Would you schedule Oregon that early in the season? First game, basically first game of the year, Joe?
Yeah, that would be a tough situation to do that. It's not the greatest schedule. I'm sure that the coaching staff really didn't care for that. That might be something a little bit later. But, you know, the way the Big Ten schedule is set up, I mean, you know, you either play them early or you don't play them. And you play them within the first 4 or 5 weeks, and otherwise most of the teams don't have a non-conference game later in the season. So, you know, I don't know. It's going to be tough. I mean, I guess our Big Ten money didn't do anything for us, Coach. I mean,
no, I guess it didn't. You got Michigan State that goes out, loses to Oregon. You've got Ohio State. Obviously, they've had the quarterback issue, and maybe that would have been a different story. But, Joe, if you'll remember when I was talking with Bill Salm, I talked about the fact that I thought that was a trap game. I thought Frank Beamer, Virginia Tech, I knew they were young, but I'd also read how athletic they were, and they really, as close as the score was, and it could have gone either way in that last quarter, Virginia Tech really controlled the game. I mean, you always felt like Ohio State was struggling to stay in the game. And, of course, that game was at home in the Horseshoe, and people just were sitting on their hands as Ohio State fans because Urban Meyer's group could never really create anything on either side of the ball. So to lose, to have Ohio State lose that game, Michigan dominated by Notre Dame, but I've always said that Michigan-Notre Dame game was a tough game because whoever lost that game was going to have a tough time winning the national championship. But Michigan was thoroughly dominated. Purdue loses. Wisconsin lost a couple weeks ago to LSU. It really is a conference that in this first year of the championship series, the Final Four of football, I don't see a Big Ten team sniffing it. I just don't see it, Joe.
No, I don't. I think that it's going to be a year where we're shut out and outside looking in. And, you know, it's just been a situation where we've just not been real strong. I mean, even though Purdue didn't have the greatest of weeks last week, I sit here thinking, if they can right the ship somehow, they could still have a half decent season, because this isn't your regular Big Ten. They were, you know, I mean, Illinois won, but they Western Kentucky had them on the ropes. You know, so I mean,
yeah. And speaking of Illinois, Joe, and that's a good point, Western had them on the ropes, but they've been on the ropes 2 weeks in a row. They've had to throw late touchdowns to win both their games. And it just makes you wonder about this conference. And your point is great, but look at an Ohio State. Look at a Michigan State. Look at Michigan. Is Nebraska going to end up being the team of the Big Ten this year? I will not take the stance of a Colin Cowherd who says, well, the Big Ten, they're in the winter schools. They can't recruit. I don't believe that. You know, Bill Sahm, our Indy contributor for football, also a one-time college assistant, NCAA director as well, he really felt like Ohio State was loaded on both sides of the ball besides the quarterback. But I have to beg to differ. I thought they were out-quicked. I thought athletically Virginia Tech looked better. I thought their running backs were slow. I really look at this conference, and if I'm IU, as I said to Pete, I'm pretty excited because for the first time we may be able to compete. I didn't say beat, Joe, and I know you're laughing and you're ready to hit the laugh button, but I think we can compete with these teams, unless what we saw was an aberration. That Michigan State, who I think is really good anyway, that Ohio State will clean that up. But Joe, Ohio State looks so lackluster. They just looked like they couldn't strike easily. It was such a struggle. I mean, when you look at this Big Ten, who do you see? Who do you really see as carrying the banner of the Big Ten this year?
I mean, you mentioned Nebraska. That's a possibility. I mean, you know, you go down the line, Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, you know, the three big names. I'm still not sold on Penn State. And, you know, I mean, this might be a year where if IU's defense can do something, they might make a lot of noise in the Big Ten.
Well, I'm not going to hold my breath because I know they struggle. So, folks, I got to tell you, the Big Ten to me, it doesn't look good. And you can't say, well, wait until the season goes on. Well, when the season goes on, here's the issue I've got. The Big Ten starts playing each other. So if you're not good in your non-conference schedule, does it really matter if you're beating each other within the conference? I mean, listen to what I just said. If you're not good in your non-conference schedule, and let's face it, folks, a lot of those Big Ten teams are playing MAC conference schools. If you're not good in your non-conference schedule and you get into the Big Ten and you start beating up on Big Ten teams, does that really make you good? And I'm not saying the SEC is great. You know, Texas A&M, one of the best teams. How? Their defense has been horrible. All of a sudden it's good. Alabama, Lane Kiffin is their offensive coordinator. I don't know if that's going to work. USC in the pack looks better. Oregon looks strong. But I just don't know. The Big Ten is considered one of the five power conferences, but they're only going to take four for that championship series. I don't see the Big Ten as one of those. But let's move on to a couple other things. I know people think, well, you say you're a Big Ten fan, but you're on them all the time. And I know I am, folks, and I'm sorry. But when I see us schedule these teams outside the conference and we get beat by them at home or we don't look good on the road, although I just think Michigan State, or that was just not good scheduling. And that could be different. Michigan State could run the table from here on out and really position themselves. And then if Oregon has a great year, well, then that loss isn't terrible. If Michigan State goes on and runs the table and Oregon has a great year, then that loss isn't terrible. Because remember, Oregon was ranked, I think, third at the time. So Let's take a look at a few other things. You know, Joe, you brought up Paul George and the tweeting that was going on over the Ray Rice issue. Larry Bird did not look on that very kindly. And I know Kurt Duxell mentioned that, hey, Bird, you're not going to do that much. You've got to have Paul George to win. Well, not necessarily this year because Paul George isn't going to play. But what were your overall thoughts, one, about someone at the level that Paul George is tweeting? And I saw a couple of the tweets. Why is he even weighing in on something like this that is really a taboo subject that Paul George just shouldn't be talking about?
Yeah, that was disappointing. He needs to rehab and keep his mouth shut. I mean, it didn't serve him well at all to make the comments that he made. And I'm not quite sure why he would possibly do that, because I don't know. I don't know if he knows him somehow or what, but I mean, you know, you just need to shut up, and because there's nothing good that can come on from condoning someone beating on a woman. So that's my take.
And I agree with you. I mean, sometimes these guys need to understand that less is more. You know, Paul George, that's just not his arena. That's just not something he should be involved in. I mean, we've seen this happen with Ray Rice, Greg Oden, right there in Indianapolis where Paul George is at, does what he did to his ex-girlfriend, I guess. We've seen too much of this. People say, well, cultural. It's not cultural. Middle Eastern countries treat women, they degrade them. I don't care if you have Middle Eastern type. They do. Look at the rules. There is no one that should be hitting on any woman. I don't care if Ray Rice's fiance at the time slapped him. If he wants to do anything, put his arms up. His arms are as big as people's legs. Put your arms up, block the slaps, walk away. There's no excuse. Don't say, well, I've got to defend. One woman said, well, he defended himself. He didn't defend himself. He threw a George Foreman. It's ridiculous. So listen, Paul George, I think Larry Bird had every right to come out and say something. And that doesn't mean that everybody's house is clean. But you still have to take a stand, folks. Paul George, Twitter remarks stay there forever. Jerry Jones said it right. I don't tweet on things that are issues because I want to be able to deny that I said it. If I say it in private and nobody has it on tape, and nobody has it in social media, I can deny it was ever said. I can change the way it was said. I don't know, Joe, if you heard the Danny Ferry comments. He was what I'm hearing is he was reading a scouting report on a player, and it made some cultural bias remarks that could also be taken as discriminatory. And there's whether he should be fired or not. I heard him. I heard the comments. I don't think he should be reprimanded. Use better sense in the future. I do want to say this, and I know some of you who are very liberal from the standpoint of no one should ever make a comment that isn't politically correct. Here's the thing, folks. Sometimes people say things tongue-in-cheek. They joke about it. Comedians can say it. Comedians say it, and we laugh about it, and it's okay because it was just a joke. Sometimes our humor, it's not in good taste. We make comments, it's not in good taste. But I do not believe that everybody needs to be fired over it. I do not believe that everybody needs to be chastised over it. They do need to be talked to. They need to be talked to and educated a little bit and shown why they shouldn't say it that way. But, folks, political correctness, remember this. What is politically correct today is taboo tomorrow. What was politically correct yesterday is taboo today. So, Joe, I don't know how you feel about the political correctness and all this, and every time somebody says something that somebody takes the wrong way or doesn't feel good about or is misinterpreted or whatever it might be, fire them, get rid of them, kick them out. They should never play again. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. I don't know if you want to make any thoughts, comments about it, but...
Well, you know, it just I think it's a case-by-case scenario. Sometimes we just get too involved in it. And you are right. If you want to say something and deny it, you might want to not put it out there where people can, you know, in this day and age, you know, you can screenshot anything. You could delete it 2 seconds later, but it could be screenshotted and saved forever. And, you know, I just, you and I are both Facebook people, and, you know, but what's funny is, you know, a lot of your stuff's lighthearted, fun, about your family, you know, birthdays, et cetera, and mine's about my kids, my family, et cetera, but there are those that just demand to go on there and talk about religion, I don't have a problem talking about religion, but not talking about how their religion's right and someone else's is wrong, talking about how the Democrats are so much better than the Republicans. I don't get on Facebook to look for that stuff. And I just think that, you know, what you write, you know, can always come off wrong, you know, and so watch what you say and what you do. And you'll have a lot less problems. I mean, you know, I always used to say exactly what was on my mind. I used to have people tell me when I was a younger person, hey, you know, I always know where you stand on everything. Well, you know what I've come to realize? It's a lot easier to think it, not say it. some things, you know, sometimes you just got to sit back and roll your eyes and just not mention anything. And you know, I'm sure you being a coach, you know, you lived in a glass bottle too. So I, you know, being a coach and, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting what people will say and what people will do. And I'm on my high horse and now I'm getting off.
No, your points are well taken, Joe. You know, as a coach, you were in a glass house. And even on this show, people listen and they hear things we say and they take it to heart. You know, I said things that I wouldn't have said normally. A lot of times it was to light a fire. You know, you might say, well, what do you mean? Did you cuss the kid? No, I didn't. I raised my voice. I was hard on them. I tried to find things that would get under their skin at times. But it was never meant as this is what you actually are. This is what you're acting like. This is what you're performing like. This is the effort you're giving, but not who they are as a person. I get so tired of hearing people, athletes today, saying, well, the coach disrespected me, man. You can't. You know what? You join a team. You get paid to play for a team. You have a job to do. You have a responsibility. Athletics is not like a lot of other jobs. It's demanding physically. It's how you perform with your body. It's how you use your mind. You got to know what to do when you're out there. If you don't know what you're doing out when you're out there, you hurt all the players around you. You hurt the team. If you're not giving everything you've got, mentally and physically, you hurt the team. You're getting the opportunity that you chose to take. Coaches' jobs are to teach you, but it's also to get you to play at a higher level and to play together. And, folks, that's not an easy job. And Joe knows that. His wife's a volleyball coach. It's not an easy job. And so you act and react sometimes in the moment, but that's not how you feel about someone, and that's not how you feel about life. But you're trying to get the best you can out of there. It's not an excuse, folks. It's not an excuse for people to treat others poorly. It's the fact of what it takes. You know, I've said this before. I would much rather be in a gym or on a football field or a soccer field or baseball diamond, getting chewed out by a manager or a coach, getting booed, getting cheered, whatever it might be, having a three-hour practice instead of a two-hour practice, then sitting over in the middle of the Afghanistani border in somewhere in Syria, somewhere in Iraq, walking through a minefield, taking enemy fire, trying to take cover with shells coming at you, or having a gun pointing it at some other human being because you've got to try to save your life. I would much rather be going through that or have my kids going through that than going through what I just described, because that's life and death, folks. And this is not, sports is about building character and handling adversity. And you know what? Somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to lose. Somebody's going to play, and somebody's not. But if you're going to choose to play, bring it with everything you got. Let's talk about the new AD real quickly. Director of Athletics at the University of Evansville, Mark Spencer, was just hired as the new Director of Athletics at the University of Evansville. He comes from Oregon State. He was an assistant athletic director. Before that, I believe he was at St. Louis University. He is a New York East Coast native, and we welcome Mark Spencer to the Evansville community, University of Evansville. Not an easy job, Joe. It's a small school. It's financially strapped, playing in Division I level athletics, good soccer program, good basketball program. There, as Mark Spencer described it, the coaches have taken their program up the hill. Now they've got to find a way to get to the top of that hill. And it takes money. It takes facilities. It takes a lot, and U of E will be a tough job. It has been for several of the athletic directors, or directors of athletics, as they like to call it now, that have come through.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that job. I mean, it's scrutinized quite a bit. I mean, Morgan Burke can't do anything right, can't do anything wrong. He does a lot right, but he doesn't get credit for the right part. It's mostly the wrong part, and, it's just – It's just a thankless job. And Kenny, just got word from Kurt Guxell. He tried to call in. He said it was busy, which was interesting. And he is now taping for TV. He has to do his real job on TV. So he won't be joining us. So you and I can, after the break or whatever, can highlight a little bit of the high school football games in the area.
Yeah, let's do that. Folks, we're going to go to our break. We're going to miss Kurt Guxell. I love having Kurt on the show, and I did have some questions for him. But, Joe, let's do that. Let's go to break. We've got about a little under 30 minutes left. We'll jump into high school basketball, football. The reason I brought up basketball is we know one of the tradition jobs around the area is open. But we'll highlight the football games, talk about some of the teams. Folks, thank you for joining us. Again, our coaches line, sponsored by Capitol Road Partners, Lantern Road Capitol Partners, coaches line sponsored our guest today. That number is 317-576-7543. Hey, financial partners, take your business to the next level. I mean that. If you can't get the financial help from a traditional outlet, they give you not only financial direction, they give you business guidance. They're smart people at Lantern Road Capital Partners. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're talking high school. We're talking high school, and Joe and I know a little bit about high school. You're talking with us on the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tony Ubelar with Ubelar Chevy Cadillac in Jasper. Have you ever heard a car ad that looks too good to be true or has fast-talking fine print?
Buy before midnight tonight. Maybe okay, maybe not. You probably aren't eligible for this event. Ubelar's prices are better, but you can't know that.
You want to hear Ubelar's fine print? That's right, silence. Our prices will save you money, huge inventory, even bigger discounts. Ubelar & Sons Chevy Cadillac in Jasper, where customers send their friends since 1929.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hi, this is John Goldsberry, former Boilermaker and Buffalo Bill, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the show. It's the coach, Ken Schulteis, along with my sidekick partner in sports, Joe Milligan. Joe, we got to get John on the show. A former Purdue great, John Goldsberry, after this Notre Dame game, Purdue will have three games under their belt in Coach Hazel's second year. Might be time to get John on and get his thoughts on the Boilers. I know he's a diehard Boiler, obviously an alumni, great football player there. We got to get him on the show, Joe.
Well, we'll have to get him on next week and get his opinion after the Notre Dame game. I'll tell you what, last week during I was attending a funeral, so I was listening to a little bit of the game on the radio, and I did hear Tim Newton, our good friend Tim Newton, who was on the show 2 weeks ago. Someone made a great play on special teams, and he said that was a John Goldsberry play. I know that the fans in West Lafayette, they absolutely loved the guy. I mean, he was one of those players that he gave 110% every play, and I'm sure Kimball's benefiting from him giving 100% every day at work now. So yeah, I'll make a note of that. We'll get John on next week and get his opinion on where the Boilermakers are at, and we can go from there, and also get his opinion on where the Heritage Hills Patriots are at after tonight's game. You know, game of undefeated teams, Jasper 3-0 and Heritage Hills 3-0. It'll be at Jerry Brewer Alumni Stadium starting at 8 o'clock Eastern time tonight, and I'm looking quite forward to it.
Well, you should. Obviously, being a Jasper fan and your son on the team, but I'm going to say this, and I know we have a number of people from the Heritage Hills area, Santa Claus, that listen to us. I do not look for this to be a competitive game. And I know they're both undefeated, but I think Jasper is by far and away the much stronger team. Obviously, Heritage Hills is much improved. They're healthier this year. Their skilled players are healthy. But I believe Jasper is just too big and strong for the Patriots. I do think the skilled players, the Ben Moores of the world, the Reed Milligans, the Austin Hollises, but especially the line play of Jasper on both sides of the ball, it's just too strong. And I don't see anyone continues on the Jasper schedule until they get into the class playoffs, class football playoffs. I don't see anyone competing with Jasper. And I said this a week ago, and I'll say it again, from a coach's standpoint, the Jasper coach's focus is the maturity level of their team to get better regardless of who they play. Preparation is to get better. Games are to get better regardless of their competition. You can control some of that. Some of it you can't because the kids get used to playing against a certain level. But Joe, I've got to tell you, and I know you've got ties to Heritage Hills. Your nephew played at Heritage Hills, and he passed away in a tragic accident a few years ago. He was an outstanding athlete over there. I know you have relatives that coach and have been involved in the Heritage Hills program, played there. I just don't see this as a game of undefeated teams right now.
Well, my opinion is the numbers game hurts Heritage Hills. They just don't have the numbers out that they used to have out for football over there. And also, Kenton Cruz, who had a really nice game against Jasper last year, he is out with mono and will not play this week. And when you're a school like Heritage Hills with the numbers you have, you know, you just don't have that next person to plug in there that's going to compete to the level that Kenton Cruz would have competed at. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, this is always a good game. Last year, Heritage Hills wasn't very good, but they stayed in the game for quite a while. And I know a lot of people are pointing out that, well, you know, Heritage Hills' teams they've played only have a record, their combined record is 0-9. You know, well, you know, I'm not sure what Memorial is. What's Memorial's record right now, Coach?
I think Memorial is 1-2.
One and two, so one and two. So their combined record is 4-5. You know, they've, you know, Heritage, Southridge being at 2-1 and Boonville being at 1-2. So, well, you know, it's kind of like a Purdue Notre Dame game. Sometimes you, you know, throw out the record because you just know it's, you know, it's going to be closer than you think. At least we hope it is. It'll be a much more enjoyable Saturday afternoon. Actually, I plan on painting my basement tomorrow to avoid the game. But, you know, this game's a lot like that. You know, Heritage Hills, Jasper, and but you know, watching Nolan Aarons at quarterback, he just the thing is, yes, Austin Aulis is a guy you got to look out for, but you've got Cody Jacob, you've got Grant Teal, you've got Ben Moore, you just got so many weapons out there to throw the ball to, and then you know Ben Moore, I mean, Ben Moore is the closest thing to Mike Berger that Jasper's had since Mike Berger, and I'm not talking about yards. I know Mike's records were phenomenal, but the heart that he has, you know, the quickness that he has, and it's going to be a good game. I think I'm going to be out there at 6 o'clock getting fired up for the game. And Coach, you're invited. Come on up to the Jasper seating parking field right behind the visitors bleachers and tailgate with me.
Well, I've got several invitations to go places. I don't know if Jasper's where I'll be, but I'm just going to go on record right now and say that this Heritage Hills Jasper game is not going to be a game like 2-3-0 teams. I think it's just going to be Jasper's going to dominate this game on both sides of the ball. They should, and I think they will. Before we get into some other matchups, Joe, let me just go through the AP Indiana football top 10 rankings just real quickly.
Okay.
In 6A, you've got Carmel at the top, Ben Davis, Warren Central, Penn, Southport of Indianapolis, who easily could be 3-0 at this time, Fishers, Center Grove, Carroll, and Avon. And it's interesting that Ben Davis and Carmel Carmel and Ben Davis are 1-2. A lot of people think Ben Davis should be in that top spot. In 5A, Fort Wayne Snyder, Concord, Westfield, Cathedral. Listen to this, folks. This is how much respect Cathedral gets up in Indianapolis around the state. They are 0-2. Cathedral is 0-2, and they are ranked fourth in 5A. Of course, they're playing up a class because they've been winning state championships, and Indiana suffers from the success rule, as I call it. And Commish, don't get mad at me. Still want you on the show. So Commissioner Cox, don't get mad at me for that. Fort Wayne, Wayne, McCutcheon. And it's nice to see Terre Haute South back up in there, Bloomington South, Munster. And believe it or not, both Terre Haute teams, Terre Haute North, is up in that top 10 as well in 5A. 4A looks like another solid year for Columbus East. And, Joe, you know all about Columbus East. Indianapolis Chittard has an outstanding team this year. New Palestine, Dwinger, Jasper's fifth. Wright's 3-0 so far, sixth. I don't think they're that as good as 3-0, but they're good. New Haven, South Bend St. Joe, Plymouth, and Ron Colley. Couple of those teams, because Jasper is in the 4A, you got Columbus East and Chittard in there, and I believe that Columbus East and Chittard, would they meet in the semi-state round? So Jasper would meet a Columbus East in the regional round. Is that how that would work, Joe?
Yes, regional, Columbus East. Hopefully it's Columbus East and Jasper. Or, you know, I'll take Jasper and someone other than Columbus East even, too, you know. Columbus East has got a great team. I mean, you know, they're a quarterback, their tailback, Markel Jones, right now is verbal to Purdue. He's having another great year, and us Purdue fans are holding our breath and hoping that the aviation program at Purdue, which he wants to go into, will be enough to keep him because, you know, he's a real talent. And if someone like a Notre Dame comes calling, I think it'd spell doom for us Boilermakers.
Yeah, and in Columbus East, solid. Of course, I'm going to tell you right now that Chittard has a really solid team as well. So the 4A route for Jasper is tough, and, of course, Wrights is in Jasper sectional, and they are 3-0, but I think Jasper is a better team than Wrights right now. In 3A, we've got Andrean, Indianapolis, Brebeuf Jesuit, Bill Somm coaches there, on the line. Gibson Southern, who is a member of the PAC, and Gibson Southern is loaded, and they're putting up lots of points, Joe. And I know Kurt Guxell gets to see them a couple times this year. Gibson Southern and Coach Hart loaded again.
Yes, they are. That I, you know, I almost wish week nine they just kept it open, and midway through the season everyone could negotiate for a game, because that Gibson Southern Jasper game I think would be a fun game to watch, and something that we're not going to get to see.
You know, Joe, that would be a great idea if conferences, think about this, if conferences would make an agreement that the last game of the year they would have open, and they would seed the best team in this conference gets to play the best team in that conference. The second best team in this conference gets to play the second best, or maybe the second best team in this conference gets to play the best team in that conference. Wouldn't that be an interesting dynamic to throw into high school football, especially down in this area, to where going into that tournament, they would be assured of playing what would be on paper a strong game. That's a great idea, Joe.
I thought about that the other day, you know, because, I mean, Gibson Southern and Jasper, that would be a fun matchup to watch. Is never going to happen because they're in different classes and different conferences. And I have heard rumor that Jasper and Gibson Southern would like to find a way to make that happen again. It was always a fun game, even when in the Big 8 Conference. I mean, you know, Gibson Southern was always a good game for Jasper. And it would be great, but you know, I don't know who you drop. You'd have to drop Memorial, Southridge, or Heritage Hills, and all three of those are pretty big rivalries games, and so it'd be tough.
I agree, and I'm sorry for the pause in there, folks. I was looking at a couple of these other rankings. Down in 2A, you've got Modern Day. They're really strong. They play Memorial tonight. That is a home game for Memorial. Modern Day beat Memorial a couple weeks ago at the Rice Bowl, and for some quirkiness that happened in the scheduling, Modern Day and Memorial ended up playing a home-away game for each team twice in the same season. That doesn't really, I guess it's a home-and-home game in the same season. That really doesn't happen very often in football, where one team will play another team twice unless they end up playing each other in the playoffs. Modern Day is number one. Coach Gable has a great squad again. Cecina, Rensselaer, Lafayette Catholic, Triton Central, and, of course, Southridge comes in at number six. They're 2-1. They hammered Forest Park, got hammered by Jasper, and they play what is normally a competitive North Posey team. Joe, they just dominated a woeful Forest Park team last week. Any news, thoughts? Southridge healthy, ready to go?
Yeah, I wish we'd had Kurt on to talk about that, because I don't follow Southridge that close now that it's over, other than to look at their scores. I've heard nothing about injuries. I mean, they've, you know, with Stetter at quarterback, Craig at running back, you know, the Nordoff kid at tight end and linebacker. I mean, they've got a nice, solid team. I know Jeremiah Mundy, one of their senior lineman, has been out. I'm not sure on the status of him, on when he'd make it back, but I do know that he would add a lot to that line if he was able to make it back this season. But other than that, I've not really heard anything about Southridge, you know, how healthy they are. But I do know they probably rested people a little bit last week, got a lot of kids in. You know, Forest Park's just not to the level that they were there for a while. You know, they're trying to make it back, and they've got a great coach, and he'll work hard, and they'll get back someday.
And in 1A, we've got Tri-Central First, Winamac, Fountain Central, Indianapolis Lutheran, North Vermilion, Northeastern. Linton comes in at number 7, Pioneer, Whiting, and Perry Central. You know, Joe, I was talking with our Indy contributor, Don Schulteis, this past week. And he talked about a football program up in the Indianapolis area, the Indianapolis School for the Deaf. And they have a football program, and they're very, very competitive. And one of the things we talked about was getting a member of their coaching staff on the show, and we will work on that, folks. I think it's going to be – there was an article done by Kyle Nedenrip, one of our contributors from the Indianapolis Star, and I believe it was by Kyle, and he was talking to one of the coaches who had come over from a regular school where, you know, coming over to the school for the deaf, and he said when he started coaching, he's yelling at the yelling instructions to the players. And finally he realizes they can't hear me. And so he's worked on, he already knew sign language, but he's worked on it. And I thought it was very, very interesting listening to some excerpts from that article. Joe, that's got to be an interesting situation. Coaching football for School of the Deaf, and you literally have to change the whole approach, because a lot of times you're yelling things from the sideline, the kids aren't even looking at you. So there's really got to be a focus on how you communicate.
Yeah, football is such a verbal sport that it would be an interesting thing to coach that day. You know, it would a lot of different challenges that coaching at Jasper or Southridge wouldn't have, and it would be quite interesting.
And they've actually won games. They've had a program for a while. We'll see what we can do, folks. I think that'd be a great group to bring on. So we know Southridge plays at North Posey, some of the games in the Evansville, the Pocket City. Central is playing Wright. Both those teams are 3-0. It's going to be interesting to see how that comes out. That's a great rivalry with Central and Wright. Bossy at Castle, both 1-2. I look for Castle to even up their record. Modern Day plays Memorial. I don't know. I'm going to have to take Modern Day again to remain undefeated. And North is at Harrison. Harrison has 2 wins, but the quality of schedule has not been great. North enters the game 0-3. I think that is a toss-up. Joe, real quickly, give us an update on the world of volleyball as only you can, since you do live with the coach of the Jasper Wildcat volleyball team.
Well, you know, it's always an interesting situation to live with a coach. I'm sure Janet and I can relate to that real well. You know, they've won 2 matches this week, and but they had one of their better players go down with a concussion that's going to be out for 2 weeks. But they had a junior sub come in last night and play a great game, and Allie Metzger, and you know, it's been fun. You know, she's highly stressed at this time of year. You know, her team's not where she wants them to be, and this, that, and the other thing. But you know, she could be 4-7 instead of 7-4, which I think she was about at last year at this time. But you know, 7-4, people don't. You know, someone asked me the other day, "Oh, they're only 7-4," but you know, they've played Cathedral, Columbus East, and Floyd Central, who all are ranked in the top 7 in 4A. So they've played a tough schedule, and you know, some of the other teams in the area, Bossy and Castle. Bossy is 10-2, but got beat by Castle last night in 3-0. And, you know, Modern Day is ranked 2nd in the state. Barrieve is ranked number 1 in the state in 1A, and actually Jasper and Barrieve play each other. Liz and the coach DeCourcy got together and decided that they needed to play each other. It would be a great game for each team, and they play up at Barrieve next week. So maybe, Coach, you can go visit your son, have some stop and see, and go watch some volleyball.
Well, if you'll remember, Joe, and folks, only on the Coach K and Joe Show will you get a well-rounded look at athletics, especially on the high school level. Nowhere else. I mean, we even bring you volleyball, which is actually a lot of fun and a very popular sport on the girls' side, and especially for fans to go out and watch the ladies play. Joe, one of our contributors to the show when it comes to high school basketball and Barrieve is Mike DeCourcy. And Mike DeCourcy, of course, is the husband of the Barrieve volleyball coach. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Well, now you do. And here's Joe. He didn't even know that. Mike DeCourcy, of course, the voice of the Barrieve Vikings on radio when it comes to high school basketball. He's been on with us, as well as Travis Madison. So it's great to see Barry doing so well. And to Liz's credit, I said this last week, I'll say it again. She plays a tough schedule. She's not afraid to go out and play the tough teams, especially early. That's how your team gets better. Joe, before this show ends up, and I'm showing about 5 minutes left, I'm going to run through Sunday's football games, okay? And I want
okay.
your winners. I want your winners, okay?
I can do
Here
that.
Here we go. Dallas at Tennessee.
Dallas.
New England at Minnesota.
New England.
Miami at Buffalo.
Sorry, Kurt, I'm going with Buffalo.
Jacksonville at Washington.
I'm going to go with the Redskins.
Arizona at a struggling New York Giants.
Going to go with the Arizona Cardinals.
New Orleans at Cleveland.
I would never pick Cleveland, even if they played a fifth-grade team, so I'm going to pick New Orleans.
I'll tell you what, either Cleveland played better, Brian Hoyer against the Steelers, or the Steelers are not very good. And I'm starting to think the Steelers are not very good.
And no Johnny football.
Atlanta at Cincinnati.
Oh, Bengals.
Oh, I knew that. Detroit and
yeah.
Carolina. Detroit looks good.
Lions.
Seattle at San Diego.
Seattle at San Diego. I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
St. Louis at Tampa Bay.
I'm going to go with Tampa Bay.
Houston at Oakland.
There.
Houston at Oakland.
I'm going with Houston.
I like what Houston's doing. I think their coaching staff's done a great job of putting things together down there. Kansas City at Denver. Kansas City did not look good in their first outing. Kansas City at Denver.
I'm going to go with Denver. I think that Peyton Manning's going to have a great year.
Jets at Green Bay.
We're going to go with the Packers.
Chicago and Jay Cutler, and boy, has he been taking some criticism. Jay Cutler in Chicago at San Francisco.
Going to go with the 49ers.
All right. I tell you what, Jay, and we know Jay because he's from the Heritage Hills area, has been taking a lot of criticism with his leadership on the field with that team. But again, we're in the second week. But remember what I said, folks, at the top of the show. Statistically, teams that start 0-2 rarely make the playoffs. Teams that start 0-2 rarely make the playoffs. And there's some pretty good names on this list of teams that are 0-1 that you would normally think of as playoff teams. So this week, from a historical statistic perspective, becomes big. Joe, great stuff. We got about a minute left. I want to thank our guests, Michael Pegram, Peaks.com, Pete Sampson, Irish Illustrated. Kurt couldn't be with us. Great stuff, folks. Take care of yourselves. Believe in yourselves. It's not the end. It's the beginning. There's more to come. God bless you. Joe, take us home.
Okay, for Coach K, this is Joe saying, you know, attend a high school football game tonight. Or $5 usually is the price. You can't beat that deal. If not, go to the Notre Dame Purdue game, over to Bowling Green, go to the IU game, Colts, Bengals, etc. There's a lot going on. For Coach K, this is Joe saying we'll see you next week on the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Idea Fusion Media, Ubelor and Sons of Jasper and Vincennes, Harmon Dental Care, and by Jasper Today. See you next week.